chug, 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 chug,
Hello and welcome back to the Wizard Staff. I'm your host, Guy.
And I'm Blake.
And we are two drunk novices who like to talk about EDH. We drink and swear, so you've been warned. Please drink responsibly when you're talking about children's card games. Well, well, well. Well, well, well. Let's do the time spiral again. But
Again and again.
Yeah, had to think of a quirky little nickname for this episode. We are going to be going over Time Spiraled Remastered, which is Magic's first paper remastered set. It's similar to how they've done sets where, you know, you have your modern masters, which redo a lot of cards that are, like, expensive and we need to get our hands on. This, however, is almost completely taking the draft environment of Planar Chaos, Time Spiral, and Future Sight and combining it into one set, and it's all reprints, and we're just going to be talking about, you know, the history of Time Spiral, some of the things that have come out of that that have made a big impact on EDH, because there were kind of a few things, and then just some of the most notable cards that we think you should be picking up now with Time Spiral.
Yeah, so it's not going to be like we're not going to be reviewing all three of those sets. We're just going to give like a brief history lesson and like kind of talk about the set in broad perspective, right?
Yeah, I mean, these came out 10 years ago and neither of us were playing, and EDH wasn't really EDH was a thing back then, but it wasn't like as big of a thing as it is now, at least.
Right.
Well, before we get into that, Blake, what are you drinking?
I am drinking a lager called Tierra Madre by Mother Earth Brewing Company. It's all right. Like, there's not really anything too special about it, but, you know, it does the trick. I'm enjoying it. I feel like we haven't recorded in a while, so I'm enjoying this.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm drinking Cloud, spelled with a K. It's a Korean beer. I kind of like it. It's just pretty basic, to be honest. I've had it sometimes mixed with soju, but I'm not doing that tonight, just because a little tired. So just, you know, drinking a nice, easy beer. Well, I guess, like, there's no point in, like, beating around the bush anymore. Let's just jump right in. So, what is Time Spiral? Or what was it? Because it was a thing previously. It's not like this is new to us. So, originally, Time Spiral was a block made of three sets that started in fall of 2006 and ended in spring 2007. So, you got Time Spiral, Planar Chaos, and Future Sight. And when they designed this set, they had the past, present, and future all in mind. So, Time Spiral was meant to represent the past, Planar Chaos was meant to represent the present, and then Future Sight was meant to represent the future.
Makes sense.
And they kind of built around this idea of time during these three blocks. Yeah. So in those sets, they had things that, like, you know, reference Magic's history. We had some power down versions of the Power 9 cards. Planar Chaos, which, you know, it's kind of hard to design for the present, because when you're thinking about the present, you're living in the present, and it's kind of like, how do you do that? And so what they did was they made 45 color-shifted cards that were cards previously in one color, but imagining if, you know, things were different, what would they be like in another color? And we'll talk a little bit about that in a bit. And then in Future Sight, they designed cards that we could potentially see in Magic's future, and even kind of gave them a unique frame that you'll see on screen if you're watching this on YouTube. And so the three main mechanics that came out of this were Suspend, Split Second, and Flash. Though Flash was around already, just not keyworded like it was. Kind of like how they only recently keyworded mill.
Right, right.
So they just kind of came up with a more elegant way of like putting it on a card. And that's what led it to become an evergreen mechanic, which, you know, now appears in almost every set. And then, fun fact, but Planeswalkers were originally going to be introduced in this set, but due to timing and trying to figure out how Planeswalkers would work, they were kept for a couple more sets to then be released in Lorwyn. Yeah. And so this was because in the original Time Spiral block, the idea was the universe of Magic was resetting, because the original Planeswalkers, who were kind of like gods, who could create whole universes, like literally just the most powerful beings that could like walk the earth, or I guess the multiverse in this case, they had to give up, you know, their Planeswalker spark to help save the universe. And then that kind of reset things and made new Planeswalkers, but Planeswalkers that weren't nearly as powerful. So we were finally able to see, you know, Planeswalkers on cards, you know, being able to be true to the flavor without them being literally unstoppable.
Right. They kind of had to nerf them in order to actually print them. So, Guy, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe Planeswalker as a word was first hinted on Tarmogoyf?
That is correct, Blake. That is a neat little fun fact that you'd like to include. They did a couple things like that in their future site where they hinted at keywords or kind of cards that could show up. Like, so Tarmogoyf had Planeswalkers, and then the other notable one was Contraptions, which showed up on a future site card, and players were like,
can we get
some Contraptions? Yeah, Steamflogger Boss. And Mark Rosewater didn't say this. I think Aaron Forsyth said this, where he was kind of like, look, we made Contraptions as kind of like a joke. Don't expect we're never gonna to actually do see it. That. And then players got upset after that. And then Mark Rosewater was like, okay, we're going to have to find some way to make Contraptions. And they showed up then in the unstable set. Yeah. So they showed up in Silver Border. So it's kind of like, you know, we're able to give this to you where we can.
Yeah, there's like a ton of super fun trivia that I'm sure we could be here all day, but we gotta talk about other stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, if you look at the set, and if you're like one of those Magic players who's been invested since the very beginning, I'm sure you could notice all the Easter eggs or kind of references that they make. Mm-hmm. But if you're kind of a newer player, you're probably not going to catch a lot of that. And I think that was also one of the most, what's a good word?
Easter eggs?
No. So yeah, if you were a player who was immersed from the beginning, you would notice a lot of these Easter eggs or kind of the references that they were trying to make. But if you were a newer player, you probably weren't going to get as much of that, and it wasn't going to be nearly as investing for you as it was for the people who had been around. And I think that's what caused such like a big rift originally, because I have heard that tournament play was up, but sales were down. And I think that's just because the set was, you know, trying to do too much, and it was only a turn on for the people who really got it.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, notably, Time Spiral had time-shifted cards, similar to what we're seeing today in Time Spiral Remastered, where they took some cards from Magic's history and reprinted them with the old border in mind. And that was the first time that Magic had done something like this, where they've kind of given it the showcase treatment, quote-unquote, and that actually drastically changed how they ended up distributing cards from the future on, because it kind of became the dedicated slot in a pack where it was meant to always be like one thing that wasn't going to be the rare. So it's kind of similar to how we're seeing like you get a foil in every pack now. This was the first time where they had been like, yep, it's guaranteed that you're going to get a time shifted card, and that's going to be the slot. So, but now today we're seeing Time Spiral Remastered, which is kind of like the best of, where we have reprints from all three sets combined into one draft format, since this set was regarded as one of the most fun draft environments. Even though I haven't played, I just see players talking about this on Twitter all the time, saying like, yep, totally in for this, like, we're just going to crack a lot of packs once the pandemic's over.
That's the hard part. It's like, yeah, we want to draft, but, like, we can't really meet in person yet in most places.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about Planar Chaos a little bit. Because okay. I feel like that's the most problematic.
Contentious?
Contentious. That was the word I was looking for earlier when I was trying to describe the rift between players, you know, being really invested. And, yeah, it's very contentious. Thank you, Blake.
You're welcome.
I'm not drunk yet, but...
but we're getting there.
I'm glad I have you around. So, in the original Planar Chaos, there were 45 color-shifted cards that represented the color of mana being shifted. It kind of ties back into the theme of there was this, like, rift, and that's why the Planeswalkers had to give up their spark in order to save it.
Mm-hmm.
The, like, flow of mana was just, like, all off. So... one of the easiest examples I can give is Concentrate, which is a blue card, where it's two blue-blue, sorcery, draw three cards. It was time-shifted, or like, color-shifted, I guess, into Harmonize, which, you know, EDH players love, which is two green-green, sorcery, draw three cards. And so the idea was like, okay, in green... drawing cards is meant to represent, you know, the growth of life, instead of in blue, where it's meant to represent gaining knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And so these cards are functionally identical, just now shifted into another color.
Mm-hmm.
And this has caused some contention in the community in the previous years when making new cards. Planar Chaos is often listed as examples of previous times where a color has been able to do said desired effect, but not realizing that Planar Chaos was kind of a one-off, I don't think that they'll ever make another set like Planar Chaos just because of, you know, the color pie.
Oh yeah.
Not all the effects stayed in the color shift. So, for example, green does not have the direct card draw from Harmonize anymore, or never really did. It just kind of got it for the one card, and now players are like, make more cards like this, and they're like, we're not going to, because that was kind of the point of the set. It was just meant to be like, you know, fun, quirky one-off. And now, you know, drawing cards is only related to creatures for green. So if you want to learn more, Mark Rosewater wrote a good article about the mechanical color pie and kind of like showing you where mechanics lie. So when you're asking about, like, you know, giving a certain effect to a certain color, like, check before just to see if that card or effect should actually be in that color. Because I feel like most of the time people don't realize that that's not something the color should do. And you can maybe, like, work around it a little bit, but it's they're really trying to, like, you know, not make any one color too powerful.
Right, and I think Mark Rosewater has spoken about the fact that, like, whenever players complain, like, this should have been a white card, this should have been a blue card, this should have been a whatever card, like, they often, players often point to, like, a single Planar Chaos card, and it's like, ah, that's, like, not a good piece of evidence to submit at all. And so he's, like, said, like, Harmonize is, like, the biggest problem child of a card from this set, and it's just given him a lot of headaches over the years, and I understand why.
Yeah. So, if you want to learn more about that, go ahead. And, you know, we are an EDH podcast, so we can't go without talking about the legendary creatures of this set.
Not even if we tried.
We're not going to go into... yeah, we're not going to go into, like, a in-depth, you know, here's how to build this kind of deck thing, like we would sometimes do, or how we normally do, when we're talking about cards. We were just going to mention, like, you know, what are some of the legendary creatures that are being reprinted in the set, and what are probably going to be the most popular ones, or ones that if you're going to build a deck, you should pick up right now. So we got Krovox, Ascendant Hero, 4WW, Legendary Creature Human Noval. It's just kind of like an Anthem effect creature, and then you can like pay 2 life to bring it back to your hand.
Yeah, I've never seen this card. Yeah, I've never seen this card either. No one plays this.
I've never seen it as a commander, and I've never seen it as a 99 card.
Same. Alright, next one is more relevant. It is Mangara of Korondor, 1WW, Legendary Creature, Human Wizard, 1/1. It can tap to exile itself and target permanent. This one I do see more often in the 99 of certain decks, especially like Blink and Flicker decks, where like you can kind of get around its own effect, so like it's a recurrable removal spell, basically. So this card is awesome. It does have new art, Radical.
Yeah. And we also got Mangara recently in Core Set 2021. So it's nice that they're kind of like bringing back some relevant characters that haven't been around for a while. Next we have Teferi, Mage of Zalfir, 2BBB, Legendary Creature, Human Wizard, Flash. Creature cards you own that aren't on the battlefield have Flash. And each opponent can cast spells only anytime they could cast a sorcery. Yeah, this is one of the more notable legendary creatures that is getting reprinted, and just notable cards in the set in general. Like, this is a good control card. This is a good control commander. Yeah, I think this one is worth building a deck around. It helps slow down your opponents, and it doesn't get them to, like, combo off as easily.
I'll be honest, I have never seen this as a commander, and I've only ever seen this in the 99 once.
Okay.
So, I'm not quite as high on this card. Like, I mean, it does have Flash, it does enable your other stuff, and it does enable you and slow down your opponents. So, like, I'm not saying it's a bad card at all. I'm just saying I don't actually see it played that much.
Well, maybe we'll see it played more often, because it was also kind of expensive. So hopefully this reprint set brings it down a bit.
Okay, fair enough. This next card I'm excited for. It is Venser, Shaper Savant. It is 2BBB. Legendary Creature, Human Wizard, 2/2. It has Flash, and when it enters the battlefield, return target spell or permanent to its owner's hand. I see this a whole bunch in the 99 of certain decks. Again, also like the Blink and like Flicker decks, where you can just repeatedly like interact and disrupt your opponents, because this also can stop like spells on the stack, which is insane. So I should probably pick this one up too.
Yeah, I mean, reading this, you're kind of... I didn't understand this effect when I first played with it. Oh, and I was just like, what do you mean return target spell to its owner's hand? Like, you're not countering the spell, but you're just kind of saying like you're not getting to cast it. It's just going to go back to your hand. It's almost like a pseudo-delay kind of thing. But yeah, it's still pretty relevant, because if you're able to flicker or like bounce him,
yep,
and get this effect to go off repeatedly, yeah, that's pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
All right, next we got Miri the Cursed. 2BBB, Legendary Creature, Vampire Cat, Flying First Strike Haste. Whenever Miri the Cursed deals combat damage to a creature, put a +1/+1 counter on Miri the Cursed. Well, clearly this is a Voltron.
Oh my god. Commander,
because, you know, you're just putting +1/+1 counters on her, making her big. She has flying and haste, so that's pretty relevant for combat and for strike.
Oh my god.
I think the big thing about this reprint, though, is the original, if you kind of compare the two arts, you wouldn't know that this card has flying in the original, but looking at this one, and you see her kind of like jumping out, or at least she's in the air, mm-hmm, with like a the weather light, you then kind of had the idea of like, okay, they're up in the air. But the original just kind of had her, you know, kind of in a dark background,
like a JoJo pose,
and it was kind of, yeah, it kind of made you not really worry so much about her, because you were like, oh, I can just block her on the ground. Oh, wait, she has flying. Which is, you know, pretty relevant.
Yep. I have never seen this as the commander. I've seen this once in a 99 of a mono black vampire deck, but that was very, very long ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Moving right along, we have Akroba, Angel of Fury. So this is the, like, mono red Akroba. She is 5 red, red, red. Legendary creature Angel, 6/6. So it can't be countered. Flying trample protection from white and blue. You can pay a red. She gets +1/+0 until end of turn. And then she also has, like, morph for 3 red, red, red. So just a lot of text. I don't see this played as the commander much or in the 99, but the art is, like, super rad.
Oh, yeah. This art is much better than the original, in my opinion. Yeah, I've never seen this card played, ever. It does kind of reference the original Akroba in a way, where it does just have, like, a bunch of keyword soup on it.
Yep.
Not nearly as much as, like, abilities, like, first strike, haste kind of thing, where it's just, like, because it's a time, or not time, I keep getting those mixed up. It's a color-shifted Akroba, where instead of being white, in this universe, she's red. Yeah. Next, we got Jaya Ballard, Task Mage, 1 red, red, legendary creature, human spell shaper. For a red, tap, discard a card, destroy target blue permanent. 1 and a red, tap, discard a card, Jaya Ballard, Task Mage, deals 3 damage to any target. The creature dealt damage this way can't be regenerated this turn. And then 5 red, red, discard a card, Jaya Ballard deals 6 damage to each creature and each player. So, not bad. Though, pretty mana intensive for that last ability. I feel like a lot of people like Jaya, would just build a deck around her regardless.
Yeah, that's the only times I've seen her played where the person just, like, likes Jaya as a character in terms of lore, so, yeah. So, next card we have is Thelon of Havenwood, green-green, legendary creature Elf Druid, 2/2. Each fungus creature gets +1/+1 for each spore counter on it, and then has an activated ability of black green. Exile a fungus card from a graveyard. Put a spore counter on each fungus on the battlefield. So it's technically a Golgari card because of that activated ability. It is not mono green card. I don't really see this played that much, aside from people who are really wanting to do, like, fungus spore counter weird stuff. I think I've seen this once in the 99.
I honestly, when I was kind of, like, going over and making these notes, I totally skipped over this card twice in terms of, like, including legendary creatures on our set. I've never seen this card before. I think, though, it would be kind of relevant in that one Slimefoot deck, because that cares a lot about fungus creatures.
Right? Yeah, that was the time I saw it.
Like, Stowaway?
That was the one time I saw it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, Slimefoot cares about saprolings. This cares about fungus.
Yeah, but it's, like, kind of the vibe. It's, like, they played it because it's, fungus, saprolings, spores,
Yeah. Slimefoot himself is a fungus, at least, but yeah, I guess, like, I don't know. Seems okay, but what was I saying? Slimefoot did get a reprint in this set in the old border cards, so you can pick him up there if you like that special treatment. Alright, next we have Dralnu, Lich Lord, 3 blue black, legendary creature zombie wizard. If damage would be dealt to Dralnu, sacrifice that many permanents instead. But then tap, target instant or sorcery card in your graveyard gains flashback until end of turn. I saw Brayden from the CEDH cast make a tweet about how this was kind of the first CEDH deck.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And I looked at the list and it had quite a few cards that we cannot play with anymore. Like, I think Tinker was on the list, and I was like, in what universe was Tinker, like, legal in EDH? Like, excuse me?
Huh.
Yeah. So, kind of interesting history lesson, I suppose, but I've never seen this otherwise.
Yeah, I have never seen it as a commander or in the 99 personally. However, I have seen a lot of people play it as the commander in various gameplay videos. And as you were saying, I know in terms of early EDH, Dranu was quite popular as a Dimir commander. It's kind of a pain though, because you have to devote so many resources to make sure like nobody deals any damage to Dranu, because otherwise it sucks for you. You have to get rid of a bunch of stuff. But like in old EDH, there weren't as many commanders, there weren't as many options, and giving your stuff flashback was pretty good.
Yeah, I can imagine, I guess. Alright, who's next?
Alright. Ith High Arcanist, 5 white blue, legendary creature human wizard, 3/5 with vigilance. Can tap to untap target attacking creature, prevent all combat damage that would be dealt to and dealt by that creature this turn, suspend 4, pay white and a blue. Never seen this card as a commander, never seen this as a 99. I just want to move on.
Sure. Jorah of the Get 2, 1 blue red, legendary creature human wizard. Exile a non-land card from your hand. Put 4 time counters on the exile card. If it doesn't have suspend, it gains suspend. So we didn't just explain suspend a moment ago when we were talking about that other non-notable legendary creature. So if you have a card with suspend, at the beginning of your upkeep, you remove one of those time counters off of it, and then when it's last removed, then you can cast that card. If it's a creature card, it gains haste. And this is actually one of the more popular commanders, I feel like, that was in the set. Like,
oh, definitely.
You see her quite a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She can do some powerful things. She basically just, like, cheats the mana cost of, like, really powerful spells, basically. Can do some real battle cruiser stuff. I played it a couple times. Usually people play it as the commander. I've never seen it as the 99. I will say I have seen her played less often as time goes on. I know that people are more interested in the more recent version of her, Jorah Weatherlight Captain. I still remember her. She's not lost to my memory, but I think she's like less popular as she was.
Yeah, but definitely the ability to just make any card in your hand. I feel like the 4 time counters, if you're playing it right, you know, you get her out pretty early, and then you're pretty much going on par with, you know, what you're casting with by the time you get to that turn. And you're also able to just, as turns go on, you can just continue to put out more and more stuff in this, like, the suspend zone, quote-unquote, that it could really just bombard the table in future terms. I think the one downside is that players can see what's coming. Like, they'll know, like, oh, okay, I have 2 turns until this comes, or 3 turns until this comes.
Yeah, you just kind of hope that your threat is better than they can react. Yeah, I agree with that, though.
All right, what's next?
Moving on, we have Karavek the Merciless, 5 black red for legendary creature human shaman, 5/4. Whenever an opponent casts a spell, Karavek deals damage equal to that spell's converted mana cost to any target. So I see this mostly in the 99 of certain decks, not so much as a commander on his own. It's actually like quite decent in the kind of games that you're playing it in, because last I checked, commander players like to cast a lot of spells, which means Karavek is directing a whole bunch of damage wherever he wants. He can direct it towards any problematic creatures, and if there's not any of those, he can just start dealing damage to your opponent's face directly. And I don't know if players just play enough spells, you might just be able to like blast someone's face and kill them. I've played against this sand, like, I think I've died to it, like, maybe once or twice. Yeah.
I love the flavor text, where it's, rats and jackals feast in his swath, but even they will not walk with him, from Mangara, which I feel like is a pretty big diss.
Got owned.
Yeah. Next we have Rada, heir to Keld, red-green, legendary creature elf warrior. Whenever Rada attacks, you may add red-red, and then tap, you could add green. So, you know, I think this plays pretty well into the idea of like what these two colors do to like get mana. Like red's very ambitious, and you know, if you want to get mana, you kind of have to be more reckless, so that's why you're getting red there. But otherwise, she's just kind of like a turn two mana dork. But if you put her in the command zone, that's pretty nice, because you can pretty much always get her out turn two, turn three. You'll always have like four mana available to you at that point, so not bad.
And I think like,
or five.
Yeah, and I think she's holding like a decapitated head, which is why she's like kind of framed in the art that way, because it's like, oh, this is still a children's card game. Yeah.
Not holding back.
Yeah, I don't see her as much. I feel like her more recent iterations, because there's now like three Rata legendary creature cards, and I feel like the other two, Rata Heart of the Keld and Rata or Grand Warlord Rata, are a little bit more popular and played. But you know, it's still cool. Yeah. Next card, Safi, Eric's daughter. Green, white, legendary creature, human scout, 2/2. Sacrifice Safi. When target creature is put into your graveyard this turn, return that card to the battlefield. So this just kind of has a bunch of combo potential with a few cards like Revel Arc and that sort of stuff. It's never really played as a commander ever. It does have new art, which is pretty awesome. I think, Guy, when was it? We got her brother recently as a commander, and that was pretty sweet.
I don't know if they're brother, or I don't know if they're siblings, because last names are different, but yeah, we got Hans Eriksson in Commander Legends, who has kind of like accompanying art. Like, you can kind of see Hans in the background of this card, and then in the background of the Hans card, you can see Safi, which, that's a pretty cute Easter egg.
Well, like, their parent is Eric, and like, so Hans Eriksson, it's Eric's son, and then there's Safi, who is Eric's daughter. So they are brother-sister.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm not a linguist or anything, so I didn't know that. So thank you for telling me. But, yeah, I think this is one where, like, if they eroded these two to have partner with each other, I think that would be really cool. You know, just brother-sister duo, but, yeah. I have never seen this card, and I do appreciate this new art, because I looked at the old art, and I was like, not as much of a fan, but pretty cool. We got one more, Sliver Legion, which is Wooburg, so white, blue, black, red, green, legendary creature Sliver. All Sliver creatures get +1/+1 for each other Sliver on the battlefield, and it's a 7/7. So this is definitely one of the most expensive reprints of the set. They were going to reprint Slivers anytime, or Sliver Legion at least. This is the time to do it. I, you know, think that any Sliver deck would want this, just because they all tend to be Wooburg, and, you know, this one is kind of an Anthem effect, just making all your Slivers bigger. Yeah, I mean, pretty good.
Right. I feel like this is actually the perfect card to transition into our next section. Like, Sliver Legion's been getting so expensive over these last few months. There are a number of cards in this set that are worth a decent amount of money, and now they're being reprinted. So, Guy, I think we should do like a top 10 cards that we recommend buying, or cards that we think are our favorites from this set.
Yeah, for sure. And we're only going to mention the cards that are being reprinted in kind of like the main set of Time Spiral Remastered. We mentioned that there were 121 different time-shifted cards that were reprinted in the old border. So, for example, Solemn Simulacrum got reprinted in this set with the original art, but in the brown border, which is the border that was originally on Artifacts. We're not going to include any of those in this list, just because I think it's not really a reprint per se. They're kind of like showcase treatment cards, so they get more printings, but they aren't going to be printed as often, so you're more likely to see the cards that we're going to be talking about than any of those time shifted cards. If you want those time shifted cards, pick them up sooner than later, because the likelihood of them giving them this treatment again is very low, and I think they'll just get expensive again over time, especially the ones that are being printed now. So, yeah, don't sleep on that.
Yeah, and I think I read somewhere that if you want an old border foil, the odds are just so astronomically, like, not in your favor. Like, you're gonna have to crack so many boxes to get, like, a old border foil ponder that it's, like, ridiculous. So, unfortunately, this is not the kind of set, like, I think people initially thought when they were seeing spoilers, like, oh, we're gonna get all these old border reprints. Like, that's awesome, but, like, there's not gonna be as high of a drop rate as maybe we'd like.
Yeah, and it's not one of those sets where it's kind of print to demand, I believe. It's more of one of those limited print run kind of thing. So it'll be around for a bit, but it's not like Commander Legends, which is going to be just like a print to demand, or kind of like Jumpstart, though, you know, I feel like I've only seen Jumpstart once in a store. So yeah. All right. Number 10, so we're going to go backwards. Ancestral Visions, which is a sorcery with suspend 4. You pay a blue, and then you suspend it with 4 time counters. And then in 4 turns, you get to draw 3 cards. Or target player draws 3 cards, but I think you're going to be picking yourself every single one of the times that you're going to have this cast. But I'm not a fan of most of the cycle where they took a lot of these powerful cards and, you know, just gave them suspend. So Wheel of Fate, Restore Balance are, you know, some of the other ones. I do think this one is worth picking up since it tends to be the most expensive of the cycle, and it'll probably creep up in price again after, you know, Time Spiral Remastered's done. And I think it's the easiest one to not have to plan around. Like, with Restore Balance, you suspend in for 6 turns, I believe. And it's kind of hard to control the board in a way in 6 turns, because so much can happen where it's going to be to the most of your benefit. But, you know, just drawing 3 cards is always going to be good. So in 4 turns, you know, you draw 3 cards. Yeah, that's going to be a huge boost later in the game. So yeah, I think this one's definitely the best one. I mean, Wheel of Fate might be a good budget alternative for Wheel of Fortune. However, you know, we have Wheel of Misfortune now, which I think would be a better choice. But yeah, that's number 10 in my opinion.
I guess I'll be honest, like, I've only ever really seen this in the 99 of, like, Aegis Maelstrom Wielder decks, because Suspend does interact well with Cascade, where, like, you just get the card the effect right away. So I guess you could also see it in, like, Maelstrom Wanderer decks. But yeah, this is why it's, like, our top 10. Like, as we go down further in the list, there's definitely, like, even more relevant cards, I think.
Yeah. What's number 9?
Yeah, so for example, number 9 is Gauntlet of Power. It is a 5 mana value artifact that says when it enters the battlefield, choose a color. Creatures of the chosen color get +1/+1. And more importantly, whenever a basic land is tapped for mana, if the chosen color of the chosen color, its controller adds an additional 1 mana of that color. So it's basically like a mana doubler. And those are generally pretty good.
Yeah, I think, especially when I was new to playing, that text where it's like, add an additional mana, was pretty enticing, because I was like, oh man, once I get this out on turn 5, I'm gonna have so much mana. And, you know, there's so many other cards out there that do
are slightly better.
Yeah, but this one, now getting a reprint, I think will be a good, more budget alternative. It's not too expensive. Like, I think it's sitting around $15 right now. And it'll probably drop a little in price. So, not bad. And, I mean, if you also are a monocolored deck, like, you know, mono white might want to run this. in some decks where you're not running too much ramp just because it needs the help. But yeah.
Yeah, like if you're playing like a monocolor deck with mostly basics and very few utility lands, yeah, this might be within your budget too.
I think the weird thing to me also about this card is it's a gauntlet, so it does kind of scream that it would be an equipment, but it's not, which is a little weird.
I suppose.
But I digress. Next we have Akroma's Memorial, which is 7 mana, legendary artifact. Creatures you control have flying, first strike, vigilance, trample, haste, and protection from black and from red. So it gives all your creatures keyword soup that the original Akroma had.
Yeah, I put this card on the list just because this card is like always rising in price. Every single time I've like checked in on it, it's been rising. And now it's been reprinted, so it'll go down a little bit. I recommend people buying this because like there are multiple strategies that do want this card. There's like Eldrazi, there's like Legendary Matters cards, there's artifacts, because this is an artifact, it synergizes with it pretty well. There's like big mana decks where you just vomit out a bunch of like huge threats, and then Akroma's Memorial makes them even more of a threat. There's just a good number of strategies that want this card.
Yeah, I agree.
Next up we have, well, we're gonna cheat here. We actually kind of put three cards here, but because they're all part of a cycle. So we have Pact of Negation, Summoner's Pact, and Slaughter Pact. Basically, the idea between these cards is like they all cost 0 mana. They're all instants. And the idea is like you get an effect, and then you don't have to actually pay the mana for them until your next upkeep. So, for example, Pact of Negation, you counter target spell, and then you don't really have to pay for it until like the beginning of your next upkeep. And if you don't, you do lose the game. So like that's kind of the idea of these cards. It's like, okay, you get to cast this for free now, but later on, you're going to have to pay the mana for it, and if you don't, you're going to fucking lose the game. Obviously, you know, if you talk to any experienced players, they'll kind of tell you, like, you know, it's still worth that downside because there are so many ways you can, like, nullify that downside. Like, you might just win the game before your next upkeep, and you don't even have to worry about it.
Yeah, I definitely was kind of one of those people where I was like, why would I ever play with this? And then I opened one in a pact, and I started playing with it, and I was like, oh, okay, I see. Just the ability to, like, tap out, and then, you know, it's kind of like Force of Will, Pact of Negation, and, you know, recently Fierce Guardianship. It's just a free counter spell, and it's counter target spell. It doesn't limit yourself, which is pretty nice. Summoner's Pact and Slaughter Pact, we included on the list just because they're the two better ones of the rest of the four. Pact Negation is definitely the best one. Summoner's Pact and Slaughter Pact do see some play. The red and white one, I don't even know what the white one does, to be honest.
The white one is like Intervention Pact, and then the red one is Pact of the Titan.
Yeah.
They just don't do much. They aren't very good.
Yeah. But Summoner's Pact gets you a green creature card, so it's a tutor, which is pretty good. And then Slaughter Pact destroys a target non-black creature, which, again, pretty good to do just for like little cost. So yeah, and they're rising in price, so I would recommend trying to pick these up now.
Agreed. Ooh, I'm excited about this next one. It is Simeon Spirit Guide, 2 and a red creature ape spirit 2/2, but you don't really care about that because most of the time you're going to be exiling this from your hand to add a single red mana.
Pretty good. It was one of the other color shifted cards. Like originally it was Elvish Spirit Guide, which was a elf spirit that you could exile from your hand and add a green mana. Definitely feels better being in red though.
Yeah, it kind of feels a bit more a red thing to do. Like, okay, just like very impulsive. Like, oh, I'll get rid of this hand, make this mana this one turn. It's kind of like a ritual effect.
Mm-hmm. This art is also 10 times better than the original.
I was just about to say, like, oh yeah, this art is much better. It looks... The other one, I always just, like, saw it as a giant arm, and then I'm like, oh wait, there's a monkey attached to this arm.
Yeah. And Mark Rosewater's gone on to explain how, you know, don't expect to see a blue one, don't expect to see a green one, don't expect to see a white one, because players often ask for that as well. And I think that kind of goes into what we were talking about, how, you know, don't ask for cards that are color shifted. Just because black wouldn't do that, none of the other colors that we just mentioned would do that. Red's fast mana, impulsive mana. It makes more sense being in red, so it's fine to print it here. I mean, it is now banned in modern as well, so...
Yeah, I was just about to say that too, where it just got banned in modern, so like it's at an all-time low in terms of price, so this does see some play in CEDH, so this is probably the best time to buy it.
Yeah. Alright, next we have Delay, which is one in a blue, instant counter-target spell. If this spell is countered this way, exile it with three time counters on it instead of putting it into its owner's graveyard. If it doesn't have suspend, it gains suspend. So, similar to what we were talking about with Joyra, the card will gain suspend, and, you know, it gets three counters, and you can then cast it later. I think this is a notable counter spell if you're not going to be running any of the higher budget counter spells, like Force of Will or Pact of Negation. It's a good budget alternative. Because most of the time, I don't think you're going to care as much if the player still gets to cast a spell in three turns. Because you're doing it at the time that's least convenient for them. Because, I mean, nobody casts a spell and thinks like, yeah, I'm just doing it for the heck of it right now. They have an intention of casting it. But, you know, if you're going to counter the spell and make them then cast it later, it might not be as relevant then.
Right, and like, this counterspell is nice because you might be thinking, oh, but they still get it in three turns, and it's like, yeah, you know how much can change in three turns in EDH? So much. Like, by the time whatever they get back, like, most of the time, it's not actually that good, or not as good as if they just got it right then and there. So this is a pretty good spell. I do want to make a quick note that it does see play in CEDH, but I've noticed within the last few years or so, we've just gotten so much good interaction that the CEDH players are slowly starting to cut this. People are still playing it, don't get me wrong, but they're slowly cutting it for like Fierce Guardianship and Deflecting Swad and like all these other good interactive spells.
Yeah.
All right, next up we have Urborg, Tomb of Yawgmoth, legendary land. Each land is a swamp in addition to its other land types. Oh baby. Yes.
Yeah, this is almost an auto include in most black decks, since it turns all your utility lands into swamps. You just have to be cautious if you're playing in a black-heavy meta, because you might not want to give that upside to your opponents.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely the few times it backfires, and like you've kind of mana-fixed your opponents who are also have black in their commander color identity. So sometimes it can backfire, but most of the time it's still worth playing, and you can't ignore the synergy it has with cards like Cabal Coffers.
Has not EDH seen a reprint.
So thirsty. Yeah. People want that card reprinted so bad. Please reprint that card, Wizards, please. It's gotta happen soon. Players have been complaining for like years.
Yeah, I bought it close to when I started playing the game, and I've enjoyed how it's just climbed in price, because, yeah. Alright, next we're going to talk about Vesuva, which is another land. You may have Vesuva enter the battlefield tapped as a copy of any land on the battlefield. I think this is great for decks that really rely on a single land or have a lot of lands that they can choose from.
Mm-hmm.
Sealing, it comes in tapped as a Gaia's Cradle that your opponent might have. Like, I think that's everyone's dream. But it could come in tapped as another powerful land. Like, maybe it's a Rogue's Passage and you need to make sure your creatures can get by without being blocked or something like that.
Right. There are just... I think maybe I didn't realize this when I was first starting to play the game, but there are just a lot of very powerful lands that we can play in this format. And yeah, Vesuva doesn't actually tap for mana itself. It does enter tapped, and it sucks as a turn one play, but you know, there's been a lot of games where like Vesuva copies something very strong, and I'm just like, fuck. I am not playing Strip Mine or Wasteland or any sort of land removal. I'm in trouble.
Yeah, I think, well, okay, so Gaia's Cradle, also the ceiling. I think the other ceiling that people often try and look to with Vesuva is they will do Dark Depths. So they'll have this enter as Dark Depths, but this copy won't
I'll be honest, that's not really a thing, like, compared to other formats. Like, in EDH, people aren't really going for Dark Depths combo. It's not, like, a valid win condition. So I'm going to push back a little bit on that.
All right, whatever.
Kill me with it. Prove me wrong.
I will, and then you'll owe me a beer because that's just how things go.
Sure, fine. I'm fine with that.
He committed.
Oh, yep, I said it. All right, our number two card. We're coming to the end here, folks. It is Gemstone Caverns. It's a legendary land. So if Gemstone Caverns is in your opening hand, like, and you're not the starting player, you may begin a game with Gemstone Caverns on the battlefield with a luck counter on it. And if you do, exile a card from your hand, and then you can tap it to add a colorless. But if Gemstone Caverns has that luck counter, instead add one mana of any color. So basically, this sees play mostly in CEDH, where you're hoping that you can just play this out literally before anyone has done anything. You're hoping that you're not the first player so that you can actually put this down early and it can tap for mana of any color. And then after that, you don't really mind the fact that it taps for colorless because you theoretically already accelerated and you're ahead of your opponents.
Yeah, it's only seen one print once, and I think it's still a pretty good land regardless, just because the one... Or, I mean, you're not going to get to do this every game, obviously, otherwise you're cheating. but, yeah, it's a pretty good land, and I think worth including in any deck... Well, not any deck, but it's worth including in more decks that have multiple colors than just the one color.
Yeah, and the reason it's so high up on our list is because it's been rising in price for like the last year, and I don't know the next time they're going to reprint this, so I'd recommend getting it now if you don't already. Or just proxy, whatever you want to do.
Oh, yeah.
Guy, what's our number one?
Well, you know it had to be Damnation. Two black sorcery, destroy all creatures that can't be regenerated. Mm-hmm. And... you've seen this effect before on Wrath of God. It is the color-shifted card, or it's the color-shifted version of Wrath of God. So it's pretty neat that they did this. It was kind of how they, like, kicked off this event, or not event, but the block of Planar Chaos, by having Wrath of God on their website, and then it, you know, transformed into Damnation. This is a great mono-black board wipe. I mean, Wrath of God is also pretty good. Damnation doesn't see nearly as many printings, though. So, yeah, definitely pick it up.
Yeah, like, I think we recently had it reprinted as a secret layer drop by Sam McKinnon, so it kind of went down in price. But then before that, it was an Amonkhet invocation, so that wasn't really a very meaningful reprint, because that was super expensive. So, like, the last time we got any meaningful reprint was, like, Modern Masters 2017, which was, like, 4 years ago. So, I'd recommend getting this now, because this is a meaningful reprint. It will be somewhat available. Yes, it's a mythic, but, like, still, that's a pretty good rate at which we're going to get this card. And, oh my god, just, like, ever since I started playing, like this is like the quintessential example of like players constantly asking WotC to reprint a card, like, reprint Damnation, why haven't you reprinted Damnation yet? Come on, dude. And then WotC's like, we hear you, we will reprint it, but only where it makes sense in a product. And unfortunately, Damnation is really, because it's color shifted, because it's so tied to the idea of color shiftedness, there's very few opportunities where they can reprint it in a product and have it fit the theme or idea of the product. So there's just very few times in which Damnation can actually be reprinted, so just get it now.
Yep, totally agree. And that's going to conclude our top 10 list of, you know, cards that we think you should pick up now. I mean, overall thoughts, I really enjoy the idea of them doing kind of like this remastered block. They've done it a couple times on Arena with Amonkhet and Kaladesh, where they kind of combined them all into one draft environment, and then players were able to play with that. And this is the first time that they've been able to do it on paper, which is pretty cool, especially for us who weren't able to play with it when it first came out. So we kind of get to experience history in a way. Is there any set or block that you would want them to kind of like give the remaster treatment to, Blake?
Honestly, I don't have a particular one in mind. As long as they choose one where it creates reprints that will make EDH cards more affordable. That's really the main thing I care about. I really care about making sure that as Commander grows in popularity, that new players can still feel like it's affordable to get into the format. That's one of my major concerns. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I agree. I think this was a good starting point because this set does have quite a few cards that EDH players are going to care about. And yeah. All right. So we are the Wizard Staff Podcast. You can listen to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, YouTube, and anywhere else you listen to your podcasts. Make sure you leave a like and a review. You can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at WizardStaff101. Send us an email at thewizardstaff101@gmail.com if you want to bitch and complain about how stupid we are. Thank you very much for listening, and we hope you have a great night. Peace.
Peace.